Hey, everybody, I'm Andy Weinberg, and welcome to episode 61 of the David Wasikinen In The Pocket podcast, coming to you live on phillyrockradio.com, and of course, we're on wildfireradio.com, and wherever else you get your podcast. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing great on this rainy day, yeah.
It's great. A miserable rainy day.
I don't care,
but
I'm excited about the guest today, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're in just a few minutes, we are going to be joined on the line by one of the best drummers in the world.
Indeed.
Played with some of the biggest names in the world. His name is Jimmy Paxson. I know Dave knows him real well, and he's out in L.A., and he agreed to get up early in the morning, L.A. time, and talk with us. He said he was at a gig till like 2 a.m. last night.
That doesn't surprise me. So, well, here's the thing, like Jimmy and I have social media has kind of brought us together. You know, I've been following Jimmy. He's an early adopter to it. Is that adopter? I don't know. But basically he's been on. So I followed what he's been doing for years. And his father, I was a big fan of his father's drumming.
Great jazz drummer, right?
Yeah. Great drummer. Anything, R&B, played with great guys. So we'll get into that. So we've never really hung out, which we always try to when I'm in L.A. But so it'll be great to...
Well, you'll hang out with him over the phone this morning.
Yeah, looking forward to Jimmy.
Yeah. So we are going to be joined by Jimmy Paxson in just a few minutes. But first, I want to, of course, mention our sponsors. We have a new one on board this week,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah.
And I know this one's near and dear to you. It's School of Rock Main Line.
Kids.
Located on 511 Old Lancaster Road in Berwyn, PA, turning these young kids into these incredible rock musicians. I know you work there a couple days a week, Dave.
I hate to call it work because it's not. You know, it's been I'm there 2 days a week and I've been given lessons. I thought, you know, I need more on my plate. But Wally, my great friend Wally Smith, has been giving piano lessons and doing band stuff with these kids. And I would see him. You know, Wally's a busy guy, and I'd see him. You know, it always made them feel better. So I said, you know, they had an opportunity. I said, you know what, I'll come there. So I started on a Monday, and I do a Monday, and I do a Wednesday, and I teach these kids. Now, honestly, when I say you can't teach a kid the rock star thing, you know, but I learned their whole philosophy in giving lessons and teaching is a little different than what I did coming up. So it's been great to watch these kids learn these songs because it's a performance. They'll get on stage and they learn these songs together. And I watched them adapt to the songs and learn the songs. Young kids have never even picked up an instrument. They just wanted to do it. It's a great program. Dave March, Marsh and Rick Allison and Berwyn, they run this program. I think it's fantastic. We're happy to have them as a sponsor. Contact them if you have a young a kid that wants to learn to play music. They have great instructors there, and I'm thrilled about those guys.
Yeah, it's great. You can call them at 610-647-2900 go on schoolofrock.com and then go to locations and then look for the one in Berwyn. Again, it's the School of Rock Main Line. And next thing you know,
they're all over the place.
They're all over the country. Remember the great movie with Jack Black?
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen the movie.
Oh, it's a great movie.
But I heard it's great. But and at the same time, you know, what they're doing there is such a service. And I see these kids come out of their shells and they.
Saying 1 minute you get these, you know, young shy kid. Next thing you know, they're playing like John McVie, Mick Fleetwood.
Yeah, Mick Fleetwood. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's right now. There's a show they're doing. Fleetwood Mac versus Heart.
Oh, okay.
And so they learn all the songs and. And I get to go back and relearn the songs, and it's real cool. So I'm having a great time with it. So, yes.
Right.
So School of Rock Berwyn. Contact them and
come
rock out with us.
Yeah, 610-647-2900 or schoolofrock.com.
Yeah.
And, of course, I want to take a moment again this week to talk about a good friend and another one of today's sponsors, Gabriel Bernard.
Amazing.
The real estate market is thriving across the country, so it's a great time to invest. Gabriel is a hardworking, hard money broker that has connections with multiple private lenders and banks. If you're looking for an investment or a business loan in Pennsylvania, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Florida, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Texas, or Washington, he'll find you the best possible loan. No tax returns are required with loans up to $4 million that close in about 10 days. Construction loans, rehab loans, refinance, or other hard money loans with no prepayment penalties and rates as low as 7.75%. You can reach out to him via email at gbernard@brookwoodusa.com. That's G-B-E-R-N-A-R-D at B-R-O-O-K-W-O-O-D-U-S-A.com. Or you can call or text him at 206-777-3680.
It's great. He's a good guy too.
Yeah,
man.
Thanks,
really
Gabe, for your continued support. Yeah. And once again, we're of course brought to you by our great friends at CrokerPercussion.com.
Eric Metz,
huge supporter of the podcast. Croker Percussion is dedicated to creating quality handcrafted percussion instruments with superior sound qualities and unmatched craftsmanship. That's C-R-O-A-K-E-R percussion.com, or call them at 215-669-8588. Thanks, Eric, for your continued support.
They will be at the Delaware Drum Show on Feb 23rd, which I will be appearing at all day.
You know, at the end of the show, I got a whole new feature planned for.
It's
called Where's Dave?
Yeah, Where's Dave?
And we're going to mention some of the places you're going to be over the next few. So we'll talk about that at the end.
Excellent.
Hey, Taylor, let's get our guest Jimmy Paxson on the line now, and we can talk drums. I love listening to the admiration that drummers have for each other. And when we have drummers, your face lights up when you have another drummer on the show. It's really, it's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I love that thing about drummers too. You know,
there's definitely a bond there. Yeah.
Little different than the other guys, you know, but especially ones that, you know, like Jimmy, I've become a fan, you know, watching what he's doing. And I mean, he's a remarkable player, man, and really digs in. So it's so great to see what's happening with him. And
well, it looks like Taylor's telling us we have Jimmy on the line.
Jimmy, you on the line?
Yo, I'm here, man.
Good morning, Jim. Jimmy, it's 8 a.m. in L.A., man. It's early.
Oh, my God. Hey, Dave, man, I feel the same way about you. I'm a little shocked sitting here talking to you because I am such a fan of yours, man.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I grew up listening to you play. I saw you at Live Aid when I was like, I don't know, 15, 14.
Wow.
Like, you
Jimmy.
Know, my eyes were on you the whole time. I mean, I don't know if you want me to jump right into this.
Yeah,
but,
go ahead, Jimmy. You know, we're chill. Well, we can do whatever we want. It's good.
We used to play your tunes, like, in my band. Like, I thought everybody had that blue cassette and that blue poster. I didn't even realize, like, that it's a good point in time. That was just like a tri-state thing or something, I guess, for lack of better terms.
Yeah, we saw a lot of
those. But I lived in
Ocean
City, man.
Yeah. Zombies? Did you do Zombies? You played Zombies, right? I could imagine you could play that because it was a little odd. Like, I give some lessons and I show them that little rhythm it's borrowed off of reggae, as you know, because you play it.
It was like
Linton Kwesi Johnson. I was in the Sly Dunbar. We played with Steel Pulse. You know, these were guys I got to watch them do it. So when we played Zombies, I'm going, you know, I'm going to try to play that beat like that. And the original, because I heard you talk about Blood from a Stone from Amore. I heard you mention that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And what's the other song? In the band, I think we used to play Zombies and Hanging on a Heartbeat. And then I used to play the whole tape. And like, I remember, Fighting on the Same Side.
Yeah. Rocksteady Beat.
Concubine.
Yeah.
Like, my buddies made me feel like I was a new fan, man. Cause they had like even the earlier stuff.
Oh, man. Walk.
But you can't get much earlier than Fighting on the Same Side. Cause that was your first single with Wireless as the Flip Side.
Exactly.
That was the first official release of the
what
Hooters.
Antenna was Amore. And then we had 80% records, I think, cause we were into all that reggae thing, like big time. Cause Rob would spend time in Jamaica and you know, he came back and, you know, I mean, look, we're always trying to try to do something a little different musically. And after they did Baby Grand, it was like, okay, they were really dying to have an audience dance in front of them, you know, because they were doing with Baby Grand, everything was like kind of almost like fusion. They had great Dave Prater played drums in that band, who was an amazing drummer, and he could play in 7 and 5 and do all these wild kind of rhythms, you know, and so, but no one was really dancing to it or moving to it. So when they did the Hooters, it was like, let's do some reggae stuff and dub stuff. And we used to play, you remember Grendel's Lair, which your dad used to play at, Jimmy. There was a place in Philly on 5th and South that we used to play all the time. And we used to do the Hooters dance party every Monday night. And we just, you know, it just built over the over time, you know. So, but man, you that's so nice of you to say. And I got to tell you, what a legacy you come from. I mean, your father played with a friend of mine, John Mulhern, and you know he's a legend in Philadelphia. And I know where you come from, just from when you know when I first saw early on. I think before you got on with us, we mentioned I started following you early on in social media. I guess it was Facebook or whatever. But I, you know, the connection and the love you have for your father, really, I was like touched by that.
Well,
and he really did. You know, you were. It's in your DNA.
Well, yeah. There's an interview. I saw an interview with Jimmy, and maybe you can touch on this now, Jim. That your dad basically influenced you as a drummer before you were even born.
Wow.
I mean, it was he had you ready to go as a drummer, right?
Yeah,
right. Can you tell us that story?
It was funny because I mean, when I think about it now, like my parents were really young when they had me. My mother was only 19 when she had me.
She's a great artist too.
Yeah, she's a monster. But if you ask her now, like she'll lie about it. She'll go, "Oh yeah, well I was only 13 when I had him." Because you know, my mother is like, she looks very young.
Yeah,
she likes
does.
To you know keep it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my father went to I guess it was Music City back then. I mean, I just remember two music stores back there as a kid.
Yeah,
one was Music City, and I'll tell you an interesting thing about
music.
That store. I was in. At that point, like I was always at the Jersey, the stores in Jersey. Like
right.
There was another one called East Coast Music.
Yes,
was another one, and you know, but my father like had this little set of drums made before I was even born. He had this, and it had this cool finish, and he stuck it next to like the you know the playpen or whatever, and it was funny, man, because when he got ill.
Yeah.
I went back to Philly and I spent, there's an old photo of him and I and me leaning out of this little thing, hitting those drums, but on the like, console stereo behind it was one of those, those toys. It was like a drumming. It was a monkey with sticks on a little drum set. And you hit the switch and it went bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, fucking, pardon my French.
No, it's all right.
You're good.
You're good.
Okay, cool. And I said to him like, "Hey dad, man, look at this. Don't you love this? I mean, I love this photo, you know?" And he's like, "Yeah, man." And I go, "But I just noticed something, and you know, it was on a phone rather than like a hard photo." And I zoomed in on the little monkey. I go, "But the question is, Dad, were you my first influence?" And I pushed the screen over. I said, "For the monkey." And man, he started laughing. Jim was great. I'll tell you one of my favorite moments in L.A., and this is going to seem crazy. And by the way, Dave, happy birthday. I know it's Freddie's birthday
day. Yeah, Fred's birthday is Monday. And Freddie Rojo, Freddie Berman, his birthday is Monday. And mine was Tuesday. Thank you much, Jimmy. Thank you.
Right on. Well, I was playing at the Hotel Cafe out here. And I guess in the L.A. Weekly, they listed every player in the band who was going to be, you know, playing the gig. And I had finished playing. I think Julian Coryell may have been on guitar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually, it was Julian's gig. And we're finished, and this guy that was in the band or something goes, "Hey, man, that guy over there wants to talk to you." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, he came here expecting to see your father play drums." Because they saw Jimmy Paxton. And Freddie was in town from Philly, and they came there, and they were like, you know, "Hey, where's Jimmy Paxton?" He's like, "He's right over there." He's like, "No, that's not him." But it was like flattering to me that like somebody from Philadelphia like showed up to see my dad. And it wasn't him. I mean, that's funny when that happens. Like the one time I met John Gearin.
Yeah.
And that's
famous drummer by people that know, great, great session drummer, LA, amazing drummer. Yeah.
These drum like LA Express and all that stuff with Joni Mitchell.
Right.
And I was hanging with Nick Sample, who was Joe's kid.
Right.
And we were doing a rehearsal at the Union, and somebody had passed away, and they were having a memorial in the main hall. And Nick is such a funny guy. He's like, I heard they got some food in there, man. We should just go in there. We'll just read the cat's name off the board and like going on, man. We miss old Joe or whatever. And but when we got over there, it turned out it was this guy I knew of, and I ran into people, and dude was like, one of my friends was like, this guy, what the hell's his name? Doug Webb.
Yeah.
Was the sax player, was like, hey, Jimmy, man, this is John Gear. And he goes, John, this is Jimmy Paxton. I go, wow. Oh, man, nice to meet you. And he starts going, man, I love your playing. I've been listening to you all week. I said, wait a minute.
You're talking about my dad.
On what record? And he's like, on Ben Clatworthy's record. And I'm like, no, that's my father.
You know? Wow.
So that, you know, it's fun when that happens. Like, I ran into, and I told my dad that, and he loved it. And I ran into, I ran into Don Williams, who's a timpanist. I was fortunate to be, like, playing on stage at the Oscars one year, and Don Williams was in the pit band. He's like, you can't be the same guy I knew 30 years ago in Philly. He goes, it's funny, you look just like your dad, you know. And I told my dad, and my dad was like, I remember him. And you know what's funny about that show?
Yeah.
Not to jump around too much, but that Oscar performance was a lip sync. They couldn't mic all those people up on the stage. So I'm playing Brushes, and I'm playing it note for note to what was on the recording. But they're like, it's not going to be live. You guys are going to be playing to a track.
And it
matches up. And, my father's still giving me shit about my left hand.
Hey, was that with the Dixie Chicks or Stevie? Who were you doing that with, by the way?
With a group called the Triplets of Belleville. The composer was brought on. And, I mean, dude, this story's like segue into other ones. So,
yeah, that's okay. Your dad, so for Philly people, though, your dad played drums with Stanley Clark, right? Your dad.
Yeah, I mean, my father and Stanley has like, I mean, I have a real deep connection with Stanley.
Yeah.
Like family.
Yeah.
My mom was playing somewhere in Philly when I was born.
Right.
And the night, Stanley always tells me, the night I was born, he was driving around trying to borrow an E string for his upright. And he got to the club, and my mother wasn't there, and they said she went into labor. And he goes, so I've known you, man, since the night you were born.
Wow.
And but my father and him, my mom and Stanley started playing together like in junior high.
I saw that photo.
School, like the Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then my father met him around college, you know, like first year in college. So but I played with Stanley for a very short time. Like I did like a tour with him that was like, I don't know, a couple nights in New York. A couple nights in Italy.
Yeah.
And like something in the Ukraine. I mean, dude, that's like playing with Stanley is like getting in a, I don't know what to say. Like if somebody says like, you're going to go to the doctor and get on a treadmill for like a stress test.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I'll be fine. And you're just like coughing and hacking on that fucking thing.
I mean, wow.
I played with Stanley. Like I played this drum solo, man. And I was dying of like hyperventilating for the amount of energy I had to. Not that I didn't do that regularly, but like with him, you're expected to really throw down.
Yeah.
And then I get done, and I think it's done, and he comes up to the drums and goes, keep going. I go, he goes, don't stop, man. And I went, and it's going, and it's going, and it's going, and bang, the second time it ends, people went nuts, and he goes, now that's a reaction.
Oh, that's great, man. That's what an experience, too, man, to play with. I mean, you mentioned Joe Sample's son, but the fact that, you know, one of your gigs was playing with Joe Sample, you know, the Crusaders were one of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And I gotta say, I learned about the Crusaders through your friend John Mulhern, because when I was in 17, 18 years old, I joined a band that he had called Sundance, and I played with them for a year, and we were doing, I never had an experience back then. up till that time of playing with Horns, and we were doing Earth, Wind, and Fire, we were doing Crusaders, and it was like a real eye-opener for me. It's like I was doing more rock stuff, and then all of a sudden I get this gig, and I'm going, wow, you got to hit those horns. And I remember at the time I started taking lessons with Joe Casadas in New York because I realized I just wanted to get better. You know, you're like that. I've seen, I love how you talk about your the guys that you've taken lessons off of and how they break your stones and how they had you doing certain. I mean, Joe, I remember once Joe hit me with a stick once. He goes, you didn't fucking practice this week. God. And I'm going like, you know, I'm doing a Buddy Rich book and he hit me with a stick. And I'm going, fine. You know, like, man, you just hit me. He goes, and I said, well, but I've been gigging all week. He goes, I don't want to hear that shit. You know, you paid that $25. You're going to get, you know, like he was like one of these old guys.
I'm not here to babysit.
No, exactly, man. You had guys like that, you know, not only your father, but other people.
Well, Murray, my father, I started when I got to LA, I was like 17 and I had developed this really bad tendonitis. And like I met this friend of this drummer was my mom used to have these parties. And one of the drummers that was there was this guy, Joey Heredia. And I ran into him. Joey's great. And I was like, I can hardly fucking play, man. My arms, my wrists, I don't know what's going on. I'm thinking of going to a doctor. He goes, no, you need to go to this teacher. So he turned me on to Murray Spivak.
Yeah.
And I started going to Murray, and my father took an interest in Murray. I mean, I went first, and like my dad was like, hey, man, I should study with this guy too.
Right.
And the irony of it is like one day, my father, he had to wait for like 6 months or more. Like Jim Keltner told me he was trying to get in with Murray.
Yeah.
And Murray just was like, I don't have time.
Amazing. Wow.
But my father got in of all reasons because one day I was just being a punk, man. I didn't practice.
Yeah.
And Murray was in his 80s and couldn't see that well. And it was in the Odd Time book.
Yeah.
And I saw the page was in 7/4 and I just started playing anything in 7 on the bars I couldn't read.
Right. And he didn't like that.
And he's looking at me like, kid, you know, yeah, this is good. And then it gets all of a sudden he slowly reaches over and he closes the book and he looks at me with a straight face and goes, you think because I'm an old man, and quote, note for note, because, you know, you keep cassettes of this shit. And he's like, you think you can pull the wool over my eyes because I'm an old man?
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? He goes, I've been teaching out of this book for 55 years.
Wow.
He goes, do you think I don't know every page by heart?
Yeah.
He goes, tell your father, because I didn't drive, you know. My dad just drive me in there, and he goes,
wow.
I was living alone, but my dad would pick me up and drive me over there. And he goes, Tell your dad he can have your lesson slot, and he tell him to stop at the hardware store on the way home and buy you a plunger because maybe you'll make a better plumber than you will a drummer.
Wow! You talking? You say the Odd Time book? You're talking about the Belson book, right? Is that the Odd Time book?
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I've always kind of struggled with reading, but it's funny. Like I wanted to go study with Chuck Silverman, who was also like a Murray Spivak student. And I thought, well, this is a logical next step.
Yeah.
And Chuck was such a great dude. And when I called him and I said, yeah, I feel bad, you know, and, you know, Murray's always, you know, great. But I got kicked out. And now I got to find somebody to study with. And he goes, listen, man, he's not going to be around forever. Yes. You know, you need to call him back and tell him exactly what you just told me. And then I did. And Murray was like, oh, you're still with your, like a phone call. He's like, oh, you're starting to wise up, huh? Because you're still with your cronies and your band in the garage, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But Murray took me back in and, I kept studying with him, but you mentioned Joe and you mentioned Mulhern as well.
Yeah.
And I can tell you like there was John Mulhern.
Love
I grew
him.
Up around him,
yeah,
and,
love him.
And I love him so much, man.
Yeah.
And, he taught me like, I'll never forget one of the biggest lessons of my life was working with John when I was like, I couldn't have been more than like 11 or 12. And my mother was like, well, we need to record this song. And I remember it was like a Pablo Cruz song called I Go to Rio. And the beat was real cool.
Yeah.
And I knew it. And my mom goes, well, we're going to bring you to the studio and we're going to record it at John's. And I'd been in recording studios.
Yeah.
Like my parents basically lived in the studio in Philly.
Right.
It was owned by these Charlie and Fred Galletti. It was called the Sound Room.
Uh-huh.
I think you know Matt probably. He's a great Philly drummer now.
Uh-huh.
And but I'd witnessed a lot, but I hadn't sat down and recorded. We had a studio in the house, but like John's studio was like my first experience of like, I'm going to sit down and record.
Yeah.
And I got in there and, you know, I'm sitting there like, I'm playing all this shit. Like just, oh, there's a drum set. I'm going to start, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And John comes over to talk back and he goes, hey man. And John, I love, and he loved me, you know, we love each other, but like even then, and he goes, man, he goes, you got to stop playing. Just hit the bass drum. They just want to get sound.
right.
And he goes, and we got it in like one take.
Yeah,
and he goes, or somewhere in there, he goes like, you know, man, you got to stop all that stuff or you're never going to be able to work with a producer.
Wow.
And I thought, well, what's a producer like? I never heard that term, you know? And it stuck with me to this day. Like you're in the studio. Somebody's like, hit the kick drum, hit the bass drum. Just hit the bass drum.
Is it the bass drum? Was that in Bristol or in AC? Do you remember where you went?
That was in
Bristol.
In Bristol, at Radcliffe
Street. Yeah, I played that very same drum set, man.
He told me that not too long ago.
Yeah,
and then I used to record, at the place in
AC.
In Atlantic City too. Yeah, that was a good angle.
Yeah, but the Bristol one really, that was, you know, early days of recording. Matter of fact, I remember I did a session there, an early session there with Rob Hyman and Eric Bazillion in that very room. We were cutting something for someone else, but John was just, it was just always just great hanging with him. He's such a great soul, such a great person, man, to be with. And the fact that, you know, played with Pat Martino and helped him and did all those great things.
Oh, I know, right?
Amazing, man.
Yeah, man.
That's great.
He was always playing. He was always with my father. Like, they had a band with Mike Pattison. I mean, it was burning, you know?
Yeah, wow. That's a band. Wow, that's incredible.
Did you know Bob Kimmel? He had one of his partners in the studio over there was this guy, Bob Kimmel.
In Jersey, Atlantic City. I didn't know him.
He's great, man. Yeah. I still see him a lot. And like, you know, he gave me a lot of great tips too. I remember like 20 or whatever, I don't know how many years later, but like, I always wanted like the snare drum he had. And it was like this steel wrapped, like chroma wood, I think they call it, like a Coliseum snare.
Wow.
It was like, I don't know. It had like a shitload of lugs, and he had it mic'd with like a Sennheiser 441. I can still see it in my mind, you know?
Wow.
And like, I went and bought both of those.
You did.
So when I sat and shit. So when I get in my own studio now, like I've just since sold that stuff, but like I would look at it and it would take me back in time. But you know, John taught me a lot. Bob like was great about like giving pointers on how hard to hit the drums, like really lay into it, you know?
Yeah.
Joe Sample, man, you mentioned Joe. Yeah. Now Joe was one of my favorite human beings, like, ever. And, like, Lenny Castro told me when I took the gig with Joe, he said, whatever you do, you know, don't ask him what the gig pays. Just go do the gig, and he's going to pay you. He's going to pay you as much as he can, which turned out being more than, no disrespect to Stevie Nicks, but Joe paid, like, way fucking more.
Wow.
And, like, Joe was like, when I got the check, I called him, and I said, Joe, I got the check. He goes, yeah. And I said, yeah. And he goes, now, Jimmy. I said, man, thank you. He goes, now, Jimmy, next time somebody tells you Joe Sample is a jive, you know, that's how he talked. He goes, a jive motherfucker. what are you going to tell him? And I don't know. It just came over me. But out of my mouth came the words, not the Joe that I know. And he goes, no, that's right, motherfucker. You know, like, Joe was funny.
Oh.
I remember he said to me one day, I give you some Joe lines.
Yeah,
the classic. One was he got everything out of the way quick in a rehearsal. You know, like he said, Jimmy, how hard are you pushing on that sock cymbal?
Yeah,
loosen up your foot, man. You're pushing so hard it makes the hi-hat, it makes the sock cymbal sound like beep 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 beep. You know, and then he goes to me. And I'm looking at him while we're playing. He goes, he stops, and it's a rehearsal, and he goes, oh, Jimmy, don't be looking at me like Joe. Am I playing the right shit? You know, he's saying that's what my face looks like. He's like, you're looking at me like, Joe, don't be looking at me like, Joe, am I playing the right shit? I need you to look at me like, come on, Joe, you old motherfucker. Give it to me.
Oh, that's
and
great.
You know, man,
we
got along really well. His storytelling, man, he would get down on the floor and like act like if he was talking about climbing the mountain, he'd be on the floor, like climbing the floor.
Yeah.
Always liked to go get like great food. I mean, it was like a very condensed, very condensed lessons in life in like a short time, man. I only wish I could have
done it more.
I split to go back to Stevie, but like, you know, Joe's lessons are similar to like Waddy Wachtel, you know, it's coming right from the source.
Right.
You mentioned Joe Thucydides as well, you know, and my experience with Joe was like, I just went to that store as a kid, but I'll never forget, man. I called him. I had bought this set of like my first, like, this was like my third set of drums. Like I started with this Rogers set and then I came to LA and I got like this Pearl set that was like, it was a 12 by 15 rack tom, whatever. Yeah. And then I got obsessed. I couldn't sleep at night. I needed a purple set of Gretsch. So I finally get it.
Right.
And I'm taking a, you know, people are telling me, oh no, don't. I just wanted to put a Yamaha mount on the bass drum. Like, you know, guys in the East Coast did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to get it. You know, the Pro Drum was like right there. I knew they could do it. So I end up calling Joe Cusatus and he answers the phone. This is landline territory, like no caller ID.
Right.
And you know, he goes, I go, hey man, I just bought the set of Gretsch and it's, you know, got a 18 by 22 and I'm thinking of putting a Yamaha mount on it. You think it's going to mess with the sound? I kid you not, dude. Yeah, yeah. The guy just goes like this. This is all he said. What are you from LA? And I went, man, how did you know?
Yeah,
and he goes, yeah, because people worry about that shit out there.
He goes,
oh, it's not going to affect the sound. You know, Jerry and Stan at Pro Drum, they were like, it's, and a bass drum is meant to hold a, you know, a tom, man. It's not going to mess with anything. You know, what are you new?
I took photos last year when we did a, it's funny, they were looking at us like we were from Mars because they haven't been doing a lot of live sessions at Paramount. And now I'm doing a session at Paramount with Neil Larson, my friend Kenny Aronson, Greg Davis came from here and went out there. We played Tighten Up for a cosmetic company. So it's right down the street the LA drum shop. Yeah, they were looking at us, we had three heads because they've been doing nothing but hip hop and stuff there. They're using two faders. Mm-hmm. So we went over to the Hollywood drum shop to take photos. And dude, those two guys in that store, they're fucking they're so funny, man. They're so great. And right away I said, this is Jimmy's hang. And they were saying, Jimmy's got a drum set back there. Tell him he still owes me money for that drum set.
I dropped off, I have so much stuff back there I pick up and like is in need of repair. Man, can we put this back together? Man, those guys are so funny, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, my father was like really big on shopping there and like hanging out and
It's a great place.
You know, they're just funny. Like if you get a chance, check out their 55th anniversary video.
Oh, I will. Is that online? Can I find it? Is it YouTube or anything like that? Can I see it?
It should be.
Or their website. Do they have a website? Those guys? I don't know if they do or not.
Man, I think they're so old school that I think they just have DVD. They have DVDs.
Oh, okay.
They'll probably just give you one the next time you're in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're amazing dudes, and you know, they're just really good. I love going in there. I don't know if you know this, but I got engaged, and I've been living in Oklahoma.
Whoa.
That's where I call home now, but I mean, I'm in LA. I still have a studio here.
Yeah.
And, I'm back and forth. Actually the people I play with in LA are like, man, we see you on more gigs now than when you lived here. It's funny because, you know, like it seems like on a 5 week cycle, I'm here every 5 weeks or something and it'll be all this, I'll get no rest, and it'll be work.
Right. Well, it's great to see, man, because you're so busy.
Shocked by it. I mean, here's a guy, he grew up on the Jersey Shore, basically, Ocean City, then moved out to L.A., so you got water everywhere, and now you're living in the middle of the country with no water anywhere. How's Oklahoma treating you?
Well, you know, my fiance, she's from there, and, like, she's not, like, really, I don't know how to put it. She's not like looking to be away from her family and all of these friends she grew up with.
Right.
And I'm going to be, you know, I'm usually on the road. So it just seemed like I thought it was kind of like, well, you know, I should be here because, you know, and now that place has this rich history of music too. I mean,
sure.
Keltner's from,
You know,
Tulsa, man. Jamie Aldecker.
Amazing.
I just met, I met this guy out there named Mike Byers. He's this like local guy there, but he's such a great drummer. I guess he lived in Austin for a while.
Yeah.
And he took me by this shop, man. This is what I wanted to tell you. He's like, in Oklahoma City, if you like Pro Drum is, you know, of course, that's like a functioning drum shop. It's amazing. All the history. I mean, I go in there. It's like, it's better than going to a therapist. Like, as far as like a pill to like cheer you up, man. Like,
wow.
You just go in the Pro Drum and you're cracking jokes and everything, you know?
Indeed. Yeah.
But there's a shop in Oklahoma City, man, that if you're, guys are playing there.
I'm
like
a point to get
through.
There. I love stuff like that. I do a tour like that just to go to see the shops.
Well, this place is called Horn Trader Music, and I'm not kidding you, man. It's the biggest collection of like all that stuff, like the bomber kits with the wooden lugs and the duplex drums. Like he has a snare room there that is, and the guy, it's like hard to get a price out of the guy. Like, hey, would you sell this? Well, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to sell. What are you thinking? You know, I said, well, there's no price. I tell him there's no price tags on anything. He goes, well, the price, because the value is changing all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, this buddy of mine, Mike, was like, I finally got a drum out of him. He's like, I had to just. Like my buddy, like, you know, I have that organ trio that plays Black Sabbath, and we went out on tour with the Raconteurs, and Patrick Killer went in there, and he told me that he found this Gretsch, like two-tone Gretsch snare that he'd been looking for like 20 years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I got it sounds like a must visit.
Well, when I get back there in a couple of days, like I'll definitely go in there and if the guy doesn't shoot me for taking photos of, you know what I mean?
Hey, listen, I got to ask you mentioned Joe, and but you did that you did a lot. You mentioned Waddy and playing that band you had with Stevie Nicks, because the Hooters did a tour with Stevie Nicks. I think I mentioned it to you in 1990.
Man,
and Kunkel was playing, and I love Russ Kunkel. I mean, I remember one of the most influential shows I ever saw was when I saw, you know, Buford Jones mixing from Shoko. This goes way back at the Man Music Center, and Russ Kunkel and Danny was playing guitar.
Yeah,
Waddy was playing guitar. Leland was playing bass. The great Don Grolnick was playing piano, and they did a version of Summertime Blues that was like unbelievable. James, like people that, you know, like talking about rocking band, and Waddy played out of his mind. He was great. And then, but so we later did a tour with Stevie, and I know you've done, you know, played with her for a long time, and I love seeing you.
Years.
Yeah, wow, man. So what? And you know, I mean, I think the world of her. I think she's wonderful. And then play with Waddy, man.
That must have been amazing.
Must have been amazing.
Well, I'll tell you something, man. It was amazing, and I learned a big lesson coming in. It's that, like, you know, first of all, I met them because the drum doctor, the cartage guy,
right?
Like, I used to store some stuff there, and I had no agenda, man. I just used to hang around with Ross because I was curious how he did things, and he's a nice guy. And for whatever reason, I ended up being in the right place at the right time, and I ended up doing a lot of these like bailout sessions where somebody didn't show up, or they didn't know who to call, or they rented a drum set, they didn't have a drummer. And Ross ended up seeing me play like all these different styles.
Yeah.
And one day, Ross told me that Hutch Hutchinson.
Yeah, I know Hutch. Yep.
From Bonnie Raitt's band. Yeah.
Great
Hutch
bass,
like came in the drum doctors and was like, hey, man, I was hanging with Waddy, and he's looking for a drummer for Stevie Nicks. Do you got any recommendations? And that's not really Ross's cup of tea, nor is, like, referring people to sessions. I was just, like, I would just hang out over there.
Right.
And Ross goes, you know, I got this guy, but, like, I'm not sure you've heard of him and all this. And I had actually met Hutch, and I got the audition. So I went in, and it was, like, it was only – I played five tunes, and I made charts, but I didn't put them up. I put them on the floor, and like, there's a song, but I always talk about this one tune that Stevie has called "Outside the Rain."
Uh-huh.
And like, there's a couple of bars in the intro. Everybody I heard play it, other than the record, played it like they were playing like what's that? Ain't Too Proud to Beg, and that's not that, but that's what the impression of the intro gives you. But if you listen to that intro,
yeah,
It's not that, man. It's a whole other thing. And like, there's like one or two bars where Russ doesn't play any bass drum.
Yeah.
And my mindset was like, well, maybe the pedal came undone. Maybe he spaced out. Maybe he dropped the stick.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, there's a reason that they kept this take.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going to leave that bar bass drum out. Now, if they want me to put it in, I'll put it in.
Yeah.
So I go and I do it, and I play the intro just like it is, and we play the song just like it is. And, you know, she
knew.
She was, you know, she's like, I never got a call back. I got the gig.
Yeah.
Like, and there was guys there. Like, I could name all the drummers that were there.
Yeah.
It was a heavy thing. But I learned that, you know, they really hire you because they can see, like, okay, he gets the sound. You know, seems like a nice guy. He's just somebody we could tolerate, you know, being around. But then you get there, and, like, a few weeks into it, I mean, you realize that the real reason they hired you is because they had this idea that you could take shape with especially in a crowd like that, you know, like where Waddy's going to – I mean, Waddy broke my balls, dude. Yeah. I'm not kidding you. Like,
but you probably didn't mind, though.
One day I went home. One day I went home, and like, I called this drummer, this New York drummer, Billy Ward. Not the Sabbath guy, the other guy.
He's a really nice guy. Yeah.
And he had like a DVD that was out at the time, and like, I liked his teaching and whatever. And I said to him, I said, man, like, what do you do? You know? And he said, well, man, if he starts coming at you like that, he goes, you know, first thing you do is like really listen. He goes, and then, you know, maybe start by saying, oh yeah, sorry, you know, and like just get on the same page.
Yeah.
Don't freak out. Don't defend yourself, which I wouldn't have defended myself. Yeah. I mean, I'm just not like, there was nothing to defend. They had their point.
Right.
And but I remember one day, like every day I'd go home thinking I was going to get fired. You know?
Wow.
And I got home from the, like, in the early stages, and I got home from one of these rehearsals, and the phone rang, and I went, oh, shit. And I sat on the bed, and he goes, Jim, because Waddy didn't say goodbye to me that day. And I was like, well, this is fucked. This is going to be like the phone call there.
Oh, fuck.
And I'm, you know, because I was green, man. I didn't know that people don't always say goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, I get home, and the phone rings. It's Waddy, and I, oh, shit. And I get in a sit down, like, comfortable position. I have a flip phone. You know, I open up. Yeah, hey, Jim, man, it's Wad. Yeah, man, what's going on? Hey, man, I just wanted to let you know that, like, when you left today, I was dealing with something else, and I didn't say goodbye.
Wow. That's
and I go,
cool.
I wanted to say to him, man, I thought you were calling to, like, to fire me. Because in my head, I kind of felt like I wasn't there yet. And, like, you know, it's kind of like if you had a buzz and you got pulled over and the cop let you go. You know, you'd be like, actually, officer.
You really
are. You know, whatever. But Waddy, like, to this day, like, I just subbed a bunch of shows for Kunkel.
Yeah.
It was, and the band is this guy, Steve Postbell.
Yeah.
It's Waddy.
Yeah.
Danny Korchmar.
Yeah, I know
and
about
Leland,
that band. Yeah.
Lee Scar. Yeah, and I did, like, and it's still the same with Waddy, you know? It's like, you can't really get in there and, like, not get the lesson from him. Like, the thing about Waddy is if he tells you, like, pick it up or slow it down.
Yeah.
After you spend some time with him, you learn that he's not giving you shit about your time.
No, he's just getting the
he's adjusting the tempo.
Yeah.
And, but when he does give you shit about your time, you know it. You know, like he goes, man, he's like a, you know, he's like, hey, what are you playing? You know.
Yeah. Well, he played with Steve Jordan and Steve is like, I've heard stories. I mean, I know Steve a little bit, but, you know, Steve, you know, he I think Mellencamp's guitar player was telling me once about doing a gig with him where Steve, I don't even think they did something that wasn't with a click. And they said, we want to just back it down. And he said it was fucking perfect. You know, I mean, and like Waddy knows that, like, OK, I went on the back end of like 101, you know. Waddy knows. I mean, you know, and he's feeling it. You know, I've worked with some guys like that. I don't know if you know Jack Sherman, but he played with the Chili Peppers for a little while, guitar player, and he was great. He's now, I think he's living in Savannah, Georgia. But he was good friends with Korchmar. He actually was the guy that introduced me to Jim Keltner back in the day. But he was a guitar player that was really just keyed into the groove so deep, you know. It's like, you know, I just give you a story where the Hooters played at the Troubadour once, right? And one of the greatest compliments I ever got from a guy, he said, fuck, dude, you were like a ninja tonight. He goes, you didn't play one fill. And I was like, really?
Oh,
goes,
man.
You somehow just like, and he said, and felt, he said, you didn't play one fill for like a couple songs he was playing. I said, yeah, well, it didn't call for it. He said, it was unbelievable. So, and he always knew, and it felt right. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I felt, oh, this warmness. I mean, like, that's, okay. That's, guitar player, Waddy's that guy, you know, that just really wants everybody to feel it. Like, you know, I think that's so fucking cool, man.
Well, he said to me one time, it was funny because like Stevie was singing something and I was looking at, I got lost in the lyrics, you know, I was like going through a divorce or something, and something she said like really at that moment hit home, you know, and I see Waddy, man, he's up at the glass where the drums are, and you know, that was the old piece of glass that was two pieces, and I can see his lips and his nose sticking through the glass. And even with in-ears in and the super high volume, he goes, hey, hey, and I can hear him. And after the show, he goes, Paxton, what happened during that thing and whatever, you know? And he said, I saw you looking at your shoes, right? And I go, oh, man, something happened with the... Something happened. One of the lyrics hit me, man. I'm sorry. I just got like taken away by it. And I spaced out. He goes, you spaced out, huh? He goes, you know what I call that? Been caught grooving.
Been caught grooving.
He goes, it's not. And he says this thing. He goes, it's not your job to groove, man. He goes, let's get this. He goes, let's get this right. It's your job to generate, okay? Because everybody gets this wrong. He goes, you need to generate the energy first, and then the groove happens. You don't go up and groove, man. He goes, no, okay, now where are we gonna, you know, now where are we gonna go eat? Like in classic Boston.
Oh, man. Well, what an experience. And you did 12 years you were with them.
Well, if you Google Jimmy's name, one of the first things that comes up, either on YouTube or Google, whatever it is the drum solo you do at the start of Edge of 17, which is really awesome. I mean, that's
right on. I actually think that there's a video floating around out there that everybody's like, oh man, I just saw this video, check it out. And it's actually done by, I don't know if you guys know this guy, but he's like one of my dad's old students, Nick Casa, who's like a Philly drummer, man. Oh. You guys gotta go hang out. Nick's like a great guy, but he took some video of I don't know if it's the one from Atlantic City, but you know, Stevie would give these drum solos every night, like, and be Lenny Castro.
Yeah.
Wow. Paku played with us for a while. This guy Machito, but most of it that I did was always with Lenny.
Yeah,
you know?
Lenny's amazing.
And Lenny would play, you know, be 5 minutes open solo. Like Lenny would just, Lenny never planned his solo.
I bet.
You know?
Yeah.
And nor did I. So it worked out, but we planned an ending for it.
Right.
So he did his thing, and you know, you'd be on a tour bus with Lenny, like maybe you're listening to music from India one night, maybe the next night you're listening to shit from Brazil, and then you're listening to like Slipknot, you know, then you're watching, you know, cartoons. Lenny like lives watching the Cartoon Network. It's like
I love that guy.
And you know, he's just like, he's like the most like deep in it dude I know. You know, and you'd hear nightly, like Lenny would take like some stuff like from what we were listening to, or he'd throw some shit out there and I'd be like, wow, man, what was that? And he'd be like, oh man, you know, check this out. And then, and it would lead down this road, you know, and then I'd play a solo and then we'd end it together. But eventually like Lenny wasn't there anymore. And, you know, for whatever reason, I end up having to do this gig just myself. And they didn't have a percussionist anymore.
Right.
So now I had to cover all that time with, you know, Stevie's back there getting changed, you know, whatever. I mean, she's not, they don't party like they used to, you know, so it's no longer that, but you know, it's like, there's a good break in the middle of the show.
Right.
But it was always something. Cause she'd be like, okay. And then, you know, they'd walk off and you'd have to play a solo and you'd play and you play and then it ends. And then you play, you know, that intro to Edge of 17.
Yeah, that's cool.
Waddy walks out and then Waddy plays a 5-minute guitar solo,
yeah.
and all you can play is you know, and then he's looking at you going, where's, he wants you to count in the one, because,
yeah, where's
you know,
one?
That's on
yeah,
the
yeah,
end.
Right, 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 right.
And not because he doesn't know where it's at. He yeah. just, you know, he just wants to make sure.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, dude, I could tell you, you know, that song was like over 20 minutes long when
wow.
we played it
wow.
live. And like, and they told me that you guys opened.
I remember when Russ used to do that.
You know,
Russ and Sheila E.'s brother Michael was the percussionist at the time.
Right.
And they
That's
used to
right.
they
yeah,
used to
yeah,
do
yeah.
this little thing with the sticks, like Russell, which surprised me to see Kunkel doing that, because he was throwing a stick back to Michael and Michael would throw it back to Russell. You know, so they were throwing it back. I thought it was
yeah,
the coolest thing.
That.
It was
yeah,
really
yeah.
cool. But I was
yeah,
shocked.
Yeah,
to see.
Yeah. He's got like, you know, there's been many. I mean, if you look at Russ's history, it's like,
oh my God,
you think about all the stuff he's done, you know.
Yeah, I mean, God, played North drums, Jimmy. North drums, remember those?
Oh, I know.
You know, with Jackson.
I don't have a set of those, but yeah. like I've always wanted a set. Yeah. My father thought that North failed because they were hard to get cases for.
Yeah, well, how are you going to move it? I saw a guy buy a set from Sam Asher and King of Prussia, and there was a used kit. He bought them immediately, and I saw him loading them into his car, and I noticed that he could only get two fucking drums into his car. I went, that would have killed me
oh
immediately. You know what I mean? It's like, holy shit. But it was unbelievable,
yeah.
man, you know. But you know, you look,
yeah.
Kunkel was, you know, James Doe. James Taylor records, you know, Honey Don't Leave L.A.
Oh, man,
and,
I know,
mean,
right?
listen, I remember riding around. Andy Kravitz was just a young kid, and Andy Kravitz would ride around. We'd ride around in my car. Andy, of course, would be smoking a joint. We'd ride in my car, and we'd be listening to Richie Hayward, like Little Feet Records, and James Taylor. And people were like, oh, my God,
yeah,
you know, it was like, and Russell was one of our heroes, you know. I remember I saw him once, and I grew up really, like, I remember that band Ronin that Rick Murata had, that Waddy
yeah.
had, that I loved. And I loved Rick's playing from the very first, I mean, first time I saw him. And then he played with Eric and Rob in Baby Grand, and he cut the song Never Enough that no one's ever played. That Rick was in such a zone when he cut that. And when he listened to it, like, I remember, like, oh, I may have to play this and listen to what he played. He was, you know, he was just in another place. You know, it's hard to believe that he started playing drums when he was 19 years old. You know, it's crazy.
I know. You know, they're playing again.
Yes.
Ronin reunited, and they're in Japan right now.
Oh, no shit. Oh, I mean, that's wonderful, man. And Stanley Sheldon's playing bass, right? I think Stanley's playing bass with them.
You know, I wasn't sure who. Yeah, I got to look, but I know that I saw that. I was thinking the same thing, like, who is in the band now, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, man, I played with Edgar Winter for like a
I
good
saw
amount
that.
Of time.
Yes, well, they.
We're really good. Edgar and I are really good friends. He actually, I had a big studio in LA, like, I don't know, it's not like it was fucking Ocean Way, but I mean, I had like a 20 by 30 room or something
wow.
in the valley, and there was a piano in there I put in there and a PA and all this.
Oh.
And it became a hang. So, like, Edgar ends up moving in there. With me, right?
Yeah.
So, as I told him, I'd pay half the rent. It was like only $600 a month. So
right.
I was like, give me $300 and you can store your shit here.
Yeah. Wow.
And but I don't play with him anymore, but I still sub on that gig. So,
wow.
And he likes to sit next to me on the plane.
Yeah.
And he always wants to like pass back and forth our phones, like with this Y adapter he brings, you
yeah.
know, like so we can share each other's iTunes, like through in-ears, right?
Wow.
And he's playing me all this stuff, and he starts telling me about Rick Murata, you know, like,
yeah.
and I know Rick, but
yeah.
I mean, like, he starts telling me about his association with Rick Murata. Well, strangest thing happens, man. I get off the fucking plane in LA, and like, I'm going home, you know. It's okay. Well, what am I going to do today? You know, I got to find something, like, you know, you ever go to IKEA? It's like this endless sea of shit, and then everything looks better. Everything looks better when you see it in the store, and you get it home and you go, look at this.
What did I just
you know,
buy?
So, like, I'm in there doing that old thing. And as I'm walking out, like, I look a few cars over at the loading area, and like, I said, Rick.
It's Rick Murata.
And it's Murata.
Oh, no shit.
And I'm like, dude, I'm like, I just got off the plane, like, with Edgar, you know? Dude, God knows. I mean, Edgar gets like the weirdest gigs, too.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
he's flying out to some casino.
Yeah.
Or it'll be this great gig, but like, and I love Edgar, man. There's nobody funnier than him. He told me, he said, Jim, he was writing me a check. The day I got the gig with Stevie, he was writing me a check, and it was like, man. And he had this manager at the time that, like, not dogging Edgar, but just the comedy of it all was like, you know, there was no per diem, you know, or no pay if the flight left before like 6 a.m., you know.
We were up, rules.
Like, and right. I said, man, I said, so, and he writes me this check, and he goes, well, Jimmy, he goes, you know, the best thing about the music business is, if you, being a drummer is if you stick with it long enough, you can save hundreds. You can earn hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds of dollars.
Oh, we just laughed our ass off, right? But I'm talking to Rick about it, and it turns out the drummer that was in the White Trash was Bobby Ramirez.
Oh, Bobby Ramirez.
I don't know. Yep. And Bobby Ramirez, it's a tragic ending. Like, Bobby Ramirez got beat to death. Like, these guys in a bar were busting his balls because he had long hair. And they were saying, you know, typical stupid shit. And he was like, look, man, you know, I'm not going to fight all you guys or something like that. And they went it. And they somehow they ended up outside this bar. And, like, a gang of guys beat him to death. It's tragic, right? Yeah. And Rick is telling me how Bobby Ramirez was his idol.
Wow.
And how when he got the call to go back in there to do it, to go in there to do it, how he was like losing his mind back there because he was, you know,
loved Bob.
Over the loss.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's just, it's completely crazy.
That's sad.
You know, how that, the connection there, it's sad. And like, you know, but Edgar's playing me that stuff and, you know, Edgar didn't mention that connection and he may not have. He may not have even, known that Rick was in that headspace, you know. But it's funny, man. If you ever get a chance to talk to Edgar, man, or talk to Rick about Edgar or Edgar about Rick, man, it's a really good
We hope
good
to get Rick on at some point, you know. By the way, you mentioned Ramirez, but I grew up, Bobby Caldwell was one of my all-time favorites, you know, he's just great drummer, great recordings.
Jimmy, by the way, you need your own. Do you have a podcast? Because your stories and the way you present them, man, I could listen to you. Unfortunately, we're getting close to the end here. But I got to ask I ask our guests this every week, and we've only touched on some of the people you've played with. I mean, we could go with, you know, dozens and dozens of big names. But do you have like one holy shit moment of your career where it's just like, you know, I'm on stage with this person or I'm talking to this person? Do you have, especially maybe when you were younger, was there one moment that jumps out at you?
There is actually, I'll tell you what, man. It's the weirdest thing. And by the way, Dave, if you guys want to hook up with Rick, I'll give him a call.
Oh yeah. Love to.
About that Edgar thing. And also you guys should hook up with this drummer named Willie Ornelas.
Oh.
And I'll answer your question in a second here, but Willie, I ran into him at the NAMM show years ago and I said to him, and it was Willie played with Edgar as well years ago. And Willie did like all kinds of TV shit and like he had all this great recordings in LA. And I went up to him, I go, and he looks at me and he goes, how do you know my name? I go, dude, I mean, like, I know who you are. Like there's certain guys in LA that nobody, like they don't, and then they guys talk about them like, you know, like, Steve Schaefer, Willie Ornelas, you know, like, Mark Stevens, like all these. Yeah. And
drummers.
Willie looks at me and goes, he goes, man, he goes, how does somebody your age even, and I'm like, this, I was a kid back then. Yeah. He's, how do you even know? And I'm like, well, what are you up to these days? And he goes, man, everybody I work for is either retired or dead. You know? But hey, I'll hook you up with him. But hey, the question you had about the moment, you know, now, Dave, I got to tell you, man, like I grew up on a street in Jersey that somehow this is band that lived there called the Red Tones. You remember them?
I don't. But
they were Philly guys. And there was a drummer that they moved to Philly. And, you know, I remember them telling me like that they were hanging out with you guys. Of course you hung out with everybody. So, you know, you wouldn't remember, but I think they probably did shows with you. It was this guy, Steve May, this guy, Coco. Who else was in there? This guy, Red, and this guy, you know, Dave Bridges was named Red and this guy, Joe McGinnis. And like, you know, I remember hearing them talk about you guys. So like, You were like already like doing this shit, and we were like, how these motherfuckers get there, you know? Like,
right.
I saw you at Live Aid and all that, and I had been to all these shows. Like, I had seen the Police, I had seen everybody that came through the spectrum, you know. And what you were asking me there about you guys were asking about the moment, like, you know, I know you noticed, like, I'm sure you've seen. I don't know if you noticed, but I take pictures of the empty arenas when I get there.
Yeah. Right.
You know, or the empty club. And I put these photos up of it because I got the call to play with Alanis Morissette.
Yes, I know that story.
They went, there was some inside weird shit going on. Yeah. I don't know. Gary had to leave and there was drama at all points. And I thought it was a joke. Like I was at the Home Depot, you know?
Yeah.
And got this, you know, anyway, my now ex-wife, she was like, guy called from Alanis. And I was like, what? And yeah. I just gave him, you know, your cell number. And I'm like, I thought it was a joke. And yeah. the guy's like, well, it's not a joke, you know? So I think that was the moment because, like, I finally felt like I was no longer in that audience looking at the stage, but I was on the stage, like, looking at the chairs.
Wow.
Right.
And I was like, wow, this is what the room looks like. And I think that was probably the moment because I didn't have any rehearsals, man.
Well, I heard like, that. You jumped right into the gig, right?
Yeah, and I did a sound check, and the versions that they sent me to learn were, like, the album versions. And I get there and learn that the live versions are completely different. And all of a sudden I was up there playing like, you know, You Learn and fucking You Ought to Know and all those tunes. And I was like, holy shit, like I'm here doing it, you know? And it was mind blowing. And then of course it was short lived. They worked out their shit. Gary came back.
Yeah.
I went on to do other things.
That was Gary and, like, Novak that was doing that gig, right?
Who's a really great friend
drummer,
of mine, man.
Great drummer. Like,
you know, Chris Chaney, the bass player that was in the band then, like he and I used to play at the Holiday Inn with my mom and, you know, the brunch gig. And like he was borrowing Gary's car to get to the gig. Like Chris didn't even have a car at that point. Wow. And like one day he's like, hey, man, come down. I want to play you this tape. Like, and, you know, he put it in and it was Alanis before the record had come out.
Yeah.
And I go, man, that's fucking incredible. And he's like, I don't know if I want to do it, man, because, like, you know, I've been playing my upright around town. And I go, dude, if you don't do this, I'm going to kick your ass, you know? I was like, do they have a drummer? And they had, he goes, well, they just hired this guy, and it was Taylor Hawkins,
yes,
you know?
I remember.
And so then, like, when Taylor split, like, Gary was in there, and then Gary split, and then I was in there. I don't know. It was, like, off and on over a 9-month period. It was amazing. And then suddenly that world just fell out from under me.
Yeah.
And I went like, well, something better is going to have to come along. And when I say better, I don't mean it with disrespect.
Right.
I mean, like,
I know what you mean.
This can't be it. You can't come this far and like, you
nothing
know.
Else happens.
And then, you know, when I got the gig with Stevie, I really felt like, well, this is that other day. Like, you know, now I have a schedule that's going to go into Waddy. When I got the gig with Stevie, Waddy was like, Jim, it's Waddy Wachtel. I don't know what to tell you, but you got the gig, man. Yeah. Hope you're not doing anything for the next couple months.
Yeah.
And it's only 12 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I love the fact that you do the Dixie Chicks, too, which is something that I always pay attention to you doing. Like, I see your setups, and, you know, that's amazing. And you're about to go out on that, right? Aren't you?
I'm here with them rehearsing right now. Like, you know, it's not like we're not even, we're not, the tour is, whatever. I mean, I guess I can't even talk about it.
Yeah.
But you know, whatever. But they announced that there's a tour coming up.
Yeah.
None of us have the dates, but I know that, you know, that this new record they made is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
They actually called me to do the record, which was like super flattering.
Yeah.
But it was like, they called me on a Tuesday and were like, can you get here Thursday?
Yeah.
And I was with Lindsey Buckingham, and Lindsey's like, well, and Lindsey was not stopping me from doing it, but the tour manager had said, there's a weather pattern coming back. You might miss the show because you have to fly back the day of the show.
Right.
And it was like an overdub situation. Like, we just need you to come in and play for one day. So I couldn't make it. It was the end of that long story, even longer. I couldn't make it. And Chad Smith did the record. And also, I guess the producer, Jack Antonoff, played like on a lot of stuff.
Wow.
So
that was great.
They sent us the tracks, and we're in LA now, and we just wrapped up. Like, we've been rehearsing from about 9:30 or 10 in the morning until 7 or 8 at night.
Oh, great. Really. Well, great players.
You know, and
too.
Then, oh yeah, and then like last night I played at this little bar with this guy named King Chris out in Culver City, like till 1:30 in the morning, just wanted to do it.
You're always at it, man. I just love that you're constantly keeping your wheels greased, man. It's like, it's
thanks,
so important,
man.
For great drummers to do that. You know, it's I was given lessons yesterday.
Lenny Castro, man.
Yeah, Lenny's great. Lenny worked for Joe, too. Lenny worked for Joe Casadas in that shop. And I, when Eric, when we figured that out, he was out with Toto.
That's right.
And Eric, and he, Lenny is funny, and you, because you'll know me. He kept on calling me sir. In Europe.
No, that's
funny. Sorry. I said, stop that, Lenny. I mean, stop. You know, it's like you work, you know, because he went and he knew how much I love Joe. Because I get when the first time I ever got a gold record or platinum record, I gave it to Joe. I gave one to Joe. I said, you got to make one of these for Joe because he helped me so much. And I loved him.
Well,
and Lenny was just a class act.
When you said about keeping playing and doing these kind of club gigs, like, you know, Lenny said to me, like, man, you know, the only thing I turn down is my collar. You know? And, like, I took that to heart. It's like, you know, people call me up, they go, like, hey, man, it's a gig. You know, it could pay $200, it could pay $80, it could pay fucking nothing at all. If it's, you know, if the hang is good and the music's good, you know, let's go. But what were you saying? You were teaching?
I was giving a lesson, a quick story. You know, I was giving some lessons yesterday, and I said, let's take, we watched, there's a YouTube video of Buddy Rich playing it's called the Insane Solo, where he goes to the rim of the drum, and he's using his fingers when he's doing that little, you know, single stroke roll. It's insane. Right. It's really insane. And I love that non-bounce thing that the old time drummers do. And I said, just want to show you a reason. And why I do what I do, and because Buddy would do that kind of wacky thing, and so they were watching, and they were all like, "Oh my God, we've never seen this guy." And then I showed him one of his last interviews where I didn't realize he was 69 when he passed away. I thought he was older than that, but he was 69, which I just turned 64, so I was like, "Holy shit!" You know, but
I hear you, man. My dad died at 63. Bro.
What a great man. Jimmy, you know, I know Andy has a couple things he wants to ask you, but I'll tell you, this has been such a great hour. This has been such a great hour with you,
chatting with you,
because I so admire what you're doing.
For me, more so, man. Thank you. Hey, I don't know if I'll send you a photo of it, but like, CNC's making these drums called the Gladstone Series, which is like a shell that I suggested the shell to Jake. I was like, dude, you know, you guys make a lot of really hip shit, but why don't you just make like a straight maple shell with a sharp edge, like a Gretsch. And I sent him like some lugs from some cheap Yamaha drums that I like the lugs, and I took them off those drums, and some die cast hoops. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? Now, dude, I didn't know what tom sizes you used back like in Live Aid and all that, but I went, you know, man, I want to set like the guy from the Hooters. I said, I don't even know what size you have, but like, I said, I want fucking yellow, like Tony Williams yellow. I want a 22, I want a 10x12, and a 16x16. And I usually on that, you know, when I go play clubs or whatever, I'll usually just bring three cymbals, but I brought like a fourth. Like I put a China over to the right, like a, and I was like, I really would go over to Poncho's, this bar I played for 11 years out here, and it's more than a bar gig, dude. It's such a scene. Like, it's a great band. Everybody's a motherfucker in that band. And I would put those drums up there, man, and I would think of you, man, every time. Well, you're a major influencer, man. Well, like, an influence to me. Like, you know, like the major influence. Today they say an influencer, right, or whatever. But, like, seriously, like, you continue to influence me, man.
Jimmy, Jimmy, you should see the smile on Dave's face now. Really, you should see his smile. He's really touched.
Hey, man, I was jealous seeing you play the music pier, man. I was like, how the fuck did I wanted to go there and get like a Mac and Manco slice and catch the Hooters show at the music pier.
next time, get a Manco.
We got to do it. I don't mean to cut you off, Jimmy, because we're pretty much out of time. We got to do a part two with you.
We got to
have you back.
After you do this tour, we're going to get you back, okay? And Murata's going to hear. Murata heard from John DeChristopher recently because John was up guest on our show, and we talked about Rick and we talked about Never Enough. Now you're going to you're going to chat with him. He's going to be getting it from all sides. So we're going to get Murata.
Yeah, I'm going to reach out to him for sure. And I just sent him a message on Facebook yesterday, about he's in Osaka. I told him it's a bar to go hang out and where to get these chicken wings. You know, I love to eat.
Indeed,
so
baby.
I gotta
So let's do part two whenever you want, man.
Yeah.
Basically, all you guys got to do is call me, man. I'll answer the phone.
Yeah. Right on, Jimmy. Right on. Have a great rehearsal.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure, Jimmy.
It was great to meet you over the phone. And best of luck with the Dixie Chicks tour and your career. And hey, do you have a website or I guess just Facebook where people can check out on what you got going on? Is Facebook the best option?
Facebook's okay, man. You know, it's politically getting a little bit rough on there. Yeah. You know, I don't even belong to a political party, but I just like try to point out common sense things. And I feel like I'm getting,
we need it.
You know, I feel like I'm getting, you know, sometimes I feel like I walked into like, you know, I don't know
Hornet's
what, on there, like a shit storm.
Hornet's nest. Yeah.
Yeah. But so there or Instagram, it's really good.
Beautiful. Okay.
And, you know, Instagram's you can't tell your but I write a lot of stuff on Facebook as well. Either one, man.
Awesome. All right, well, cool. Well, check out Jimmy Paxton. Jimmy, again, thanks so much. You can't see Dave's face. Yeah. He's had a smile through this whole hour and 15 minutes. He's loving your stories.
I've been grinning so hard my face hurts. Hey, I'm gonna pump somebody on Instagram here just for the hell of it. If you don't mind, there's a guy that, because you know, man, I'm all about like fucking meatballs and cheesesteaks, of course, but you know, I'm all about like the
good food
subs, right?
Yeah.
And, like, there's a hoagie guy named, I guess his name's Dominic, but it's Hoagie Dom on Instagram.
All right,
we get into it about like, to me, ketchup belongs on a cheesesteak, you know, and like we argue about this all the time. Like, dude, where are you from? How old are you? You don't put ketchup on your cheesesteak. Oh, you would never do that.
Well, Angelo's Pizza. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Yeah. That's that guy.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah. No, I don't know, but Angelo's Pizza, Angelo on Mill Street, that's how I used to always get my cheesesteak. I'd always put ketchup on it.
I'm a non-ketchup on cheesesteak guy.
Yeah, but on Angelo's, that's why I would do it all the time, man. Yeah. It was always good ketchup.
Well, you'll love this guy because he talks about Angelo's constantly.
Yeah. Oh, Angelo. Oh, yeah. Oh, no shit. Okay. Beautiful. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same one. You know, that's like, you know.
No, there
like
was only one Angelo's in Bristol, man. That was it.
Well, we got to ask him because Well, anyway, I know you guys got to go.
All right, Jimmy, all the best, bro. It was a beautiful, beautiful hour with you, man. Absolutely. All right, my man.
Yeah, likewise.
See
man.
You, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Jimmy. Continue.
See you,
good luck. Bye-bye.
Wow, man. Was that fucking great?
He was, just let him go, man. Ask a question and let him go.
Oh, because I'm sorry for going everywhere. I said, Dad loved it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great guy, man.
Hey, we're practically out of time, but Taylor, can you play that song I got set up for you to... This is for you, Dave. Tuesday, God. David's birthday, 64.
Oh, man. Oh, I feel older. Oh, that's so great. Oh, yeah.
I had to surprise you with a little.
Well, you know what? The 64 was a big one for me, man. There were people that didn't think I was going to make 30.
and here you are at 64. Yeah. So before we go, for your birthday, I got a new feature on the show. It's called Where's Dave?
Yeah, where is Dave?
Let the people know where they can come see you. I got a whole... you're not actually going to be there, but this Sunday at the Mainline Unitarian Church in Devon... Kensington in Crisis, great documentary.
Amazing.
About the opioid situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dave was the music director for the documentary, and he's featured in the movie. So you can
and
go
I
check.
played on the soundtrack.
Right.
Gigi Nadine is the music, which is Glenn Goss and Nathan Roth.
We had on the show.
Beautiful.
Actually,
both
we had Glenn
them.
And Nathan. Yeah. So it's Kensington in Crisis. It's 4 p.m. Sunday, February 16th, at the Mainline Unitarian Church. Also, February 22nd, the bar band will be at 118 North and Wayne.
Come on
it's
out, man.
Sold
you
out.
Know what? Better get those tickets because it is selling. That
Dave
one.
Will be there. Greg Davis, Don Van Winkle, Wally Smith, Steve Butler.
Kenny Aronson.
Yeah, so that's Saturday. And then Sunday, February 23rd, Dave mentioned this earlier, at the Delaware Drum Show.
Yeah, that's
10,
fun.
10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Nurse Shrine Hall in Newcastle.
Bernard Purdy, Daniel Glass, myself, we're going to be like signing and we have some CDs. And there's I understand my friend Anthony Baker's doing some drum stuff. He told me about that to do with Neil Peart, and it's going to be really cool. And Jim Earnshaw, who's a beast of a drummer, I understand.
Cool.
Maybe so. If I'm missing somebody, I apologize, but it's going to be quite a day.
Cool. So, so that's a Delaware drum show on February 23rd.
Bucks County Drums will be there, and also Greg. Greg Eric Mertz and
Eric Mertz, Croker Percussion. Yes, okay, yeah, yes. That brings us back around to our sponsors, Croker Percussion, our friend Gabriel Bernard helping you out with loans,
School
and then of course
Rock.
The School of Rock in Berwyn, yes. Mainline School of Rock. Thank you all for being on board. Thanks to Taylor. Thanks to the fantastic Jimmy Paxton.
Jimmy,
what a great
was rocking,
guest,
man.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Oh, I gotta go get a gift.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Dallin's waiting for something nice. I'm sure. I'm sure you will not disappoint. As she calls you, Mr. Romance. Mr. Romance, I'm sure will come
the
through.
The bar is set high after this week.
Day. Hey, for Dave, I'm Andy, and we'll see you next time on In the Pocket.